and hang with a really talented receiver in the short area. I think I saw enough of him doing those things for my questions to be assuaged. Hey, welcome into the Hot Read Podcast for Friday, April the 19th. I'm your host, Easton Freeze, director of published content here at BroadwaySportsMedia.com. We're also brought to you by the 440 Podcast Network. You can follow me on social media at Easton Freeze. I am joined just 7 days and 7 days, 2 hours and 50 minutes away from the Chicago Bears being on the clock in the 2024 NFL Draft by producer JT, who you can follow on social media at JT_Runke. JT, 1 week to go. How are we feeling?
You know, I've been better. As I was telling you before the show here, this is like the second time in like 4 weeks that I feel another like round of a sinus infection or a cold kicking in. So like right now, draft season is kicking my immune system's butt right now. But, you know, it's all for the prospects and talking about these prospects. So, you know, I'm being a good soldier and marching on.
Get that sick boy off my screen. We've got people to entertain. Yeah, that's what I told you before we started, and I appreciate you being here anyways. But hey, better today than in 1 week from now, right? It would suck to...
Hopefully, right?
You know, sitting there sniffling and sneezing, and no, you'll be over by then. Don't worry about it. Just drink your emergency or whatever you need to do, and we'll be fine.
I'm trying.
Hey, we're going through two more positional groups today. We've got three left. We've got cornerbacks, edge defenders, and quarterbacks. We're doing corners and edge players, so it's a defensive episode for us today. We're going through the top 10 players at each of those two positions, almost rounding out our 2024 NFL Draft positional series. If you're with us here live on a Thursday afternoon, thank you for being here. A couple of things you can do for us. First of all, make sure you're following us on social media at Hot Read Pod on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're watching this live on Twitter or on Facebook, make sure you leave those destinations. Watch us live instead on YouTube. Go to Broadway Sports Media's YouTube page. Find this live stream, and in the comment section there is where you can be a part of today's conversation. But JT, before we dive into the positional groups today, and we've got a lot of ground to cover, so I won't beat around the bush here. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. We are 1 week out from the draft. The next week, it feels like we get as much information in the next 7 days as we have gotten in the last month, just because actual reliable leaks start to come out and teams start to solidify their boards. And so we start to hear things and insiders get word of things. And a lot of what we're going to hear in the next 7 days is bunk. It's a bunch of nonsense, but some of it is going to be real. And so I really, really look forward to every year this week having to sift through the insanity, sift through all of the information, try to decide what's real and what's not. It makes for a really entertaining time. And so with that being said, something that crossed my mind today and has, you know, I think has been on the mind of any reasonable person thinking about the Titans at 7 overall, but it's becoming, I think, more and more a reality or a possibility, I should say, not a reality. You know, the idea that these top four quarterbacks are all going to go in the first four picks, let alone the, you know, the six picks before the Titans pick, I'm not so certain that's going to be the case. If I was the one doing the picking for all of these teams, it definitely wouldn't be the case. I only view Drake May and Caleb Williams as the quarterbacks worthy of a top five, top 10 pick. I view the other guys as further on down the list. Now, there's always, you know, there's a quarterback tax, there's a quarterback premium. So guys that in an agnostic board wouldn't be picked that high, get picked that high anyway. So would it shock me to see all four go in the first six picks? No. But if even one slips below the Titans at 7, you only get three off the board. That means there are three other positions gone before the Titans pick. And one could assume it would be three receivers and or tackles. And so I threw together a scenario today on Twitter, and some folks got a little bit too caught up in the actual scenario. You could argue like, well, this team would never do that. This team, that's not the point. The point is if only three quarterbacks go, and then you see Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers and Joe Alt all come off the board before the Titans at 7. So the Titans are looking at one of the top four quarterbacks still available. One would, I think, assume J.J. McCarthy or Jaden Daniels being that guy. Maybe it's Drake May, but I'll believe it when I see it. And then you've got wide receiver two or three, depending on who you ask, and Roma Dunze out of Washington. And then you've got tackle two or three, depending on who you ask, and Olufashinu out of Penn State. I don't see that as a completely unrealistic scenario the Titans could find themselves in on draft night. And if that's where they are, what's the plan? What do you do? I'll let you answer that question. I feel like you and I are both going to immediately say, well, you try like hell to trade back. But let's say that's not a possibility. You know, I would argue some folks are saying, well, trading back, there's no way somebody wouldn't want to come up for Jaden Daniels or for a JJ McCarthy at seven. I'm not so certain of that, because for the Titans to have any leverage at all in that situation, there have to be two teams to want to do that, right? Because if there's just one team knocking down the door to try to get that last quarterback, they're scared the Titans are going to take Jaden Daniels at seven? No. They scared the Falcons are going to do it at eight? No. They scared the Bears are going to take another quarterback at nine? No. The Jets have Aaron Rodgers. Would they do it? Maybe. But like, you don't feel like you have to get to seven. You can see who has the cheapest offer at 7, 8, 9, or 10. So I don't know. What, talk me through your thought process in that situation, because I don't think it's an easy answer.
Yeah, my thought process is, if the quarterback is there, just blow it up and take that quarterback and restart. No, just kidding. I'm kidding.
No, there's a part of you. There's a dark part of your heart that would enjoy that. I know it. I know you too well.
Yeah, that is fair. I do, like many in this media market, love chaos because it makes my job fun and it makes the conversation very enticing.
Hey, however, do you think we'd have a couple of eyeballs on our live show if that happened? You think
a couple extra folks
would tune in? Yeah.
But I think in that specific scenario, it's really tough right now because, like I think you also alluded to, there are two picks before the Titans pick that really set the, well, I would argue three. There are three teams out of the six in front of the Titans that basically kind of defines the entire first round. The first one.
This is where I wanted to go with this, so I'm glad you're bringing it up.
The first one is the Washington Commanders, which I don't think is the main one, but that is a big one. I'm adding that one as the third one because if they take a certain quarterback, I think that then affects the other two options as well. And certainly. So my option there is that if Washington were to take Jaden Daniels, I think that changes the math for a lot of teams versus if they take Drake May. Second team right behind them, the Patriots. I think that they're probably a little bit higher on Jaden Daniels. And that's kind of reading the tea leaves. It could be smokescreen, mm-hmm. but that's what we've heard. So if Jaden Daniels is gone, what do they do? I know their director of scouting today, he's not called the GM, but he has a different title. I think it's director of scouting, came out today and said, you know, we're good to stick and pick at three, but you know, they have a lot of holes on that team. So moving out of there, would make sense. And the first team that you could think of there is maybe the Minnesota Vikings, who have been linked to Drake May. If you were to fall to three there, who might move hell and earth to go up and get Drake May there.
They're moving hell and earth. No heaven involved in that one.
Nope.
Gotcha.
Nope. They're because,
I wanted to make
sure.
Write that down real quick.
After Kirk Cousins, you know, post Kirk Cousins.
Oh, there's no more heaven involved.
Yes,
I see.
Exactly.
I see. No, that tracks.
So with that being said, the next one is ultimately the New York Giants. Do they take a quarterback like JJ McCarthy there at six, despite still having a lucrative Daniel Jones contract? Do they beef up the offensive line? I think that's not out of the question to get more protection. Or do they finally solve their problem of taking a wide receiver? I think all three of those teams, you really have to believe what they like in your priors. Before you hear anything else going into this week, you have to decide what you think they're going to do and then base the rest of it off of that.
No, you don't. I'm not going to. I'm going to let my opinion be changed 19 times in the next seven days.
Maybe
what are you talking
different.
About?
I don't see that's
you're probably, guess, you know, that might be the better
it
method.
Might be.
Because
I enjoy knowing what I think I know and then just kind of eating the popcorn, you know, and you know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, because this is the most unpredictable thing in the entire sports world, I feel like, which is the NFL draft. There's so much that we don't know and that we'll never know that it's really impossible to kind of get to the bottom of it. So for me personally, I'm gonna at the beginning of next week, I know what I know, and you know what, we're just gonna have fun with it.
I recognize what you're saying with the Commanders at two. I really think that the entire direction of the first round of the draft is dictated by two teams in the first round. I think what the Giants do and what the Patriots do are the two things that are going to change everything for everybody else involved. To a lesser extent, the other two teams that come to mind, and you could throw Washington in there if you want to say three, but at this point, we're just kind of naming all of the top seven picks. Like, I think to a lesser extent, the Chargers, what they do at five, whether or not they move in or out, matters a lot. and then the Commanders at two. And then if you wanted to say the Vikings with them poised to move up, I, you know, Kenneth in the comments saying, I think Easton is discounting that some team like the Vikings doesn't want to be, I think what he means is want to be beat to the punch. I'm not discounting that at all. What I'm saying is there has to be the Vikings and somebody else. Like, there has to be somebody else to beat them to the punch, right? That's the whole point. And so if there's nobody bidding against them, then that doesn't really, and I think there's also a very real possibility, by the way, that three quarterbacks go in the top six picks and one of them is to the Vikings. I could see a world in which the Bears take Caleb and then the Commanders take Jaden or Drake. And then the Vikings come up to where the Patriots are. They trade up and they take a quarterback. And then the Patriots move back. They're not interested in one, at least in the top seven picks. The Cardinals aren't taking one. The Chargers aren't taking one. Maybe the Giants do, but maybe they don't, because that's a team and a coaching staff that really needs to win now to keep their jobs. Is that going to be accomplished by getting a quarterback to learn under Daniel Jones, usurp Daniel Jones? I don't know. It gets muddy. And those two teams in particular, the Giants at six, the Patriots at three, they could go in practically any direction. They could stick, they could trade, they could go quarterback, they could go wide receiver, they could go tackle, they could go cornerback, they could go edge. None of that would surprise me ultimately, because they need all of those things. So that's what's most interesting to me about this draft, and it's going to be a fun week. So we'll talk more about that in the next couple episodes. Let's go ahead and dive into what the main topic is on today's show. Oh, just kidding. I saw Stoney's got a comment. Let's hold the phone. Let's address this, because Stoney's a VIP here. Have you guys talked about the Patriots drafting Joe Alt and building around him and Michael Pratt yet? No, we haven't, because like I just said, the Patriots, they could go tackle. And, you know, if you see the board go Caleb, Drake, Joe Alt, the next 45 minutes of our lives will be a lot of chaos, a lot of prognostication. It'll be like Wall Street. People like trying to reset the boards. We'll be doing the math on the whiteboards and like erasing things furiously and trying.
It would be like the, sorry to cut you off, but it's like, you know, in Wolf of Wall Street, when yes. Leonardo DiCaprio gets his first job of the day, and then all of a sudden the market crashes and everybody just looks up at the board and they're like,
right.
Oh my God.
We live in a new world. Yeah. We live in a different world than we lived in 30 seconds ago.
Correct.
All right. Let's dive into these top performers at the cornerback and edge positions. JT, let's start with the cornerback side of things. Just to give folks a frame of reference here, on the consensus draft board, the top 10 cornerbacks are all expected to go, I believe, inside the top 100. Let me double check here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Wow. Okay, so just kidding. The top 10 guys, the 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, the top 14 guys are expected to go in the top 100. The 10th guy on the consensus board is Max Melton, who is currently at 56. So a lot of these guys are going, you know, we're going to see three or four of them, maybe five of them go in the first round, and then another three, four, five go in the second. And so it's a strong group. I have some strong opinions on a couple of these guys who I think are the market's starting to get it correct a little bit. So, you know, not to spoil things, but if you've been listening to the show at all, you know, JT and I are big Max Melton truthers, and folks are finally coming around to appropriately placing him. I was kind of looking forward to irresponsibly ranking him in today's show, but then the market's finally caught up to it. So it's actually kind of just up to date now, but we were there first, just for the record. And then there's a couple guys here in the, you know, there's a guy sitting here on the consensus board at 38, who I don't even have on my top 10 list. And we'll talk about some of those guys. Do you have the lists we can show for the folks, JT, that are watching with us on YouTube? Let's go ahead and pull those up and take a look at what we have in common here. Okay, so I, once again, coming in blind, I have not seen these lists. JT has compiled them. I love that you and I both put Kamari. We wanted to shoehorn in Kamari Lassiter, but we didn't have the guts to put him higher than 10. We're right there together.
And before we just laying some things out here, I think we both have a cornerback. Each of us have one that I believe is in the top 50, if not top 60, that ends up not making our list. Mine that would is what be... Ennis Rakestraw Jr. makes my list. He doesn't make yours, I assume. So TJ Tampa.
Left off different guys. Interesting. Yes,
and then TJ Tampa did not make my list. And that'll be interesting conversation. But we can start with Kamari Lassiter, I think, who we both have at number 10. I think.
Why would that be, JT?
Well, he was higher on our boards, I think.
And then what
going
happened?
Into the Senior Bowl, and then he runs a 4.64.
He's slow.
And that really scares some people off, including myself, probably some other teams as well. I don't know. Do you want to give your thoughts first on Kamari Lassiter?
Yeah, I remember tweeting out at the combine the day. So at the combine, you know, they do the interviews for a position group on one morning, and then the next afternoon is when they do the testing. And it's like that, you know, morning interviews, then 36 hours later, do the testing for every group and you cycle through them. When the cornerbacks came through for their morning interviews and we were talking to him, and I talked to Kamari Lassiter a little bit. I liked the cut of his jib. I was looking into the numbers on him, looking at where prognosticators had him coming in, reading scouting reports. Like I like a lot about this guy. I you know what? I talked to some folks there that are clever and plugged into the draft community, talking about how this guy could go higher than folks expect at this point. At the time, I think he was expected to be like a mid late second round pick. And I was like, you know, this guy could be a sneaky borderline first rounder. And then 36 hours later, we watched him run that 40 yard dash he didn't, right? He did it as pro day, not at the combine.
Correct.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yes.
So okay. So yes, just kidding.
He doesn't have official 40. However, there have been rumblings that there is a 4.6. So
it was a couple weeks later.
Correct.
No. I think it was his pro day or did he not run at the pro day at all? He did. I think he did.
There is a 4.6.
He ran. I know for a fact he ran a 40 within the last month, and it was a 4.6.
Yes.
And for that reason, details aside, we know that's how slow he is. And that's really concerning, right? He's got the size that you're looking for, 5'11", almost 190 pounds. In his agility testing, 62 percentile 20-yard shuttle, 93rd percentile 3-cone drill. And then on tape, you know, I don't know what there is to say. He's got the look of a guy that can hang in the NFL as a cornerback too. That you don't see the greatest, most raw, unbelievable athlete in what he's done on the field, but he's still, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, he's crafty. Crafty is the word I'm looking for. He's a crafty cornerback that you can see him making up for some of his athletic shortcomings with strong technique and understanding the concept and understanding what the offense is likely to be throwing at him. And that kind of thing you see work in the NFL a decent amount. He's only 21 years old. All of these things about him I like enough to have him in my top 10. It's just the fact that, man, I can't with a straight face tell you he's going to be able to hang on the outside in the NFL with a speed profile like that. I don't think you can fake your way through that at the next level.
Yeah, so there's a couple things that go into my rankings. I think much like wide receivers, when we were talking to Austin Gale on that episode, I think just as much as production matters for receivers, I think production also matters for cornerbacks, in my personal opinion. And I think when looking at Kamari Lassiter's game, I think you have to put production into that as well. Zero interceptions over the last 35 games that he's played. He only has one interception in his career during his freshman year, but there. Doesn't allow a lot of touchdowns, though, to his credit there. He allows a 38.5% completion percentage. He's good in coverage, but I think that when you're looking at him like that as a team that, you know, I think his football IQ, like you said, is crafty. I think he has a really good football IQ, sees the field really well. His work ethic, I think, is also a major plus to his game. But, you know, these teams are going to look at that 4.6 40 and, you know, putting him on the outside against a Tyreek Hill or someone like that, he's just going to lose every single time. And that's
they're not
going to
do it.
Exactly. And so I think that that's why he's lower on my board. And I think that he may potentially go lower in the draft.
Yeah. Ultimately, I don't know where he's going to go because on the consensus board right now, he's at 40. It would not shock me. It would shock me to see him fall out of day two, but it would not shock me to see him fall into the third round, just depending on what teams are looking for and what they see in the rest of this class. Speaking of the rest of the class, let's transition to my number 9 cornerback, your number 8 cornerback, Andrew Phillips, out of Kentucky. I found Dane Brugler's profile on him when the Beast came out the other day particularly telling. I think he just double checking because I have consensus boards here comparing different people. Yeah, he had Andrew Phillips higher than pretty much every other significant draft handicapper out there. He's his 9th cornerback along with mine, has a second or third round grade on him. He's a 4-year junior out of college. He's a little bit on the smaller size, 31st percentile height, 39th percentile weight, but crazy athletic, 97th percentile broad and vertical. He's got a decent speed profile, 56th percentile 40-yard dash, ran a 4.48, but a 73 percentile 10-yard split. So he's got that burst you're looking for. I liked a lot of what he did in college. Not the most productive guy, but strong, like just a strong cover corner. You know, he's not contributing a ton in the run defense. He's not contributing a ton as a blitzer or anything like that. But as a cover corner, he was effective. And I think that he's somebody that is going to be able to hang in the NFL in a rotational role at first, probably a late day two, early day three pick. But man, I think that he's going to be a guy that you could develop into a starter.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I really like Andrew Phillip. He was one of the guys outside of, you know, Quinyon Mitchell lighting the Senior Bowl on fire. I think Andrew Phillip, along with a couple of other guys on this list, were guys who stood out and kind of made a name for themselves at the Senior Bowl. When I see Andrew Phillips, really, this has been pretty close to home comp, but Roger McCreary comes a lot to mind in the ability for him to play press man coverage there. He has the versatility on the inside or outside. I think that because of his size, like you said, the man coverage is tough for him to play, but he has potential to be one of the best inside corners in this class. And I think that, you know, as far as fit for the Titans, I'm not sure they'd be looking for yet another press man corner to add to the rest of this group. But then again, you know, you have Roger McCreary on a expiring contract. And if they were looking to maybe move off of him after the 2025 season, I believe he has one more year on that deal. And you want to develop a guy like Andrew Phillips, I think that's a great selection for the Titans on day three, especially given his profile.
Hey, talk to me about Ennis Rakestraw Jr. out of Missouri, who's your number nine cornerback. I chose to leave him off my list. He would have been 11 or 12. We didn't see him at the Senior Bowl. He was supposed to be there, ultimately could not attend. So going based off what we've seen on tape primarily and looking at his physical profile, I'll let you give the positives first before I tear the guy down. But I have some concerns about him to the point that I did not get him onto this list.
Right. So I think that one of the concerns that you're going to bring up is the athleticism, and I'm with
you. Do not forecast my concerns.
Okay. I'm just saying, getting out in front of it. I think the big thing I liked about him, and he's one of those guys, which I'm with you, and that's why he's pretty low on this list. And, you know, consensus board, I believe he's higher than an Andrew Phillips or a Max Melton, but I think that athleticism, much like Kamari Lassiter on our list,
38th overall, borderline first rounder.
I think in Ennis Rakestraw Jr., I think teams are going to look at that athleticism profile and say that's just not going to cut it for us as a second round pick, maybe even first round pick. But the thing I do really like about him is how sticky he is in man coverage. I mean, he is really productive in man coverage, and that's something on his tape that I really did like. But like you said, I'll let you go in on the athletic profile, but I had to get him on this list just because, you know, and we'll talk about someone on your list a little bit later, but he, for me, had some traits that I liked and had to get him on this list.
One of the words I heard, I read in description of Ennis Rakestraw Jr. was he's a pugnacious defender, which I think is fair. And he has to be because he's small and not the most agile, fast, athletic guy in the world. Like, that is the killer combo for me here, that he's 14th percentile weight, only 183 pounds, does not have the frame either to really add a bunch of meat to that bone, I don't think. And then 34th percentile broad, 43rd percentile 40-yard dash, 51st percentile 10-yard split. Like, he doesn't have a whole lot of burst. He's got a little bit of length working for him, 70th percentile arm length. So, like, that's good, I guess. But there were just too many things that I saw. I felt like his game was a little bit maxed out a little bit at the college level. And part of that just due to the fact that he's not the most athletic guy in the world. That aggressiveness, that stickiness, maybe though that's what he can hang his hat on at the next level. But, you know, if he's not playing, you know, in college, he was at his best in press man. I don't know how he's going to be able to hang in zone, and which is something he's likely to see pretty often at the next level. I don't know. With none of that long speed you're looking for, without the build you're looking for, I couldn't go for it.
I think I'm with you on that one. I mean, you look back at some of the tape, you can look at the LSU game, his best game arguably of the season. And I think that's why his stock rose so much, because you look at that game and he had a really good productive game. But like Stoney says in the comments here, Ennis Rakestraw plays like his knees creak when he gets out of bed in the morning.
Well, his name sounds like he's old enough for that to be the case.
This is also true.
Middle ages odd name. Ennis Rakestraw Jr. versus Ladd McConkey, like, is something out of
exactly.
That's a joust. It's a joust. King's in the King's parlor.
Yeah. I would like to see them play against each other at the next level. You know,
I'd go to the joust.
Rick Straw Jr. I'd be there sure. for it. However, I think that you look at some of those traits, like the stickiness in man coverage, and a team could, you know, think that they could really get something out of him and get the best of him that way.
All right, let's get to our favorite guy on this. Let's just go ahead and do it. Max Melton out of Rutgers. He's been our boy since we were introduced to him at the Senior Bowl in January. Has flown up people's lists. He is now on the consensus board up at number 56. I'm going to check the history on this. Yeah, so like at the Senior Bowl, he was on the consensus board at like 138. You know, clearly firmly in the day three, round four or five category. Now he is firmly in the second round conversation, and I think for good reason. I'll let you go first on what you love so much about Melton.
So, I mean, he's the first guy on this list that, you know, despite maybe not having the biggest size in the world, the athleticism really makes up for it in his game. You look at, you know, his 91st percentile vertical jump, 98th percentile broad jump, 83rd percentile 40-yard dash with a 4.39. You know, size is where you could knock a guy like Max Melton, 42nd percentile height with a 27th percentile weight. However, I think he has a really interesting backstory. Of course, he is the brother of Bo Melton, wide receiver for the Green Bay
NFL
Packers.
NFL legend, of course, yes.
And so in high school was a wide receiver himself. So I think that's something he really hangs his hat on, as well as that playing former wide receiver turned cornerback. It kind of allows him to see the game a little bit differently than cornerbacks themselves. I think at the next level, despite that size, when we saw him at the Senior Bowl, much like an Andrew Phillips or Quinyon Mitchell, I think he was my second best cornerback that week, because literally you put him up against a Luke McCaffrey or a Ladd McConkey like that. Dude was still sticking with some of the shiftiest route runners of the week. And I really like that about him. And at the next level, I think his football IQ is something that teams are going to really value, and why you're seeing him rise up boards.
Yeah. The athletic profile makes up for the lack of size 100%. Yeah. You took pretty much every word out of my mouth there. I think that he is a tenacious defender. The athleticism shows on tape. You know, he's not somebody that necessarily has to start on the outside, but he has a ton of experience in college on the outside. So if you wanted to throw him out there, I think that he would be just fine. So, you know, he's got inside or outside versatility. He's got the athleticism you're looking for. He's just not the biggest guy in the world. And for that reason, I think he is worthy of a day two pick. I would be super comfortable taking him in the third round if I was the Titans and found myself with an extra third round pick somehow. Let's do TJ Tampa next, who is on my board and not on yours. So let me give the reasoning as to why I have him, and I'm going to pull up his athletic testing numbers real quick. So the biggest reason why he's on my board and as high as number six, he's one of my guys in this draft, because he has a frame you can't teach. He's got athleticism that I think is going to be able to hang at the next level. So 71st percentile height, 34th percentile weight, very tall and thick enough at 190 pounds to where I think if he wanted to put some weight on, he could. He plays big. He looks big out there, and he's got movement skills at a size that you aren't quite expecting. It's that category of guys where you turn on the tape and you see them lined up, and based on how big they are on the screen, you're expecting to see one thing. And then once the ball is snapped and they are out moving in the field, you're like, that is not quite what I expected. That's kind of crazy. I just like Tampa a lot for the traits that he brings. Is he on the rawer side? Yeah, I think so. Had relatively decent production in college, but some inconsistency there. It's just the unique size, the unique fluidity, the unique athleticism in the backfield. I think that he is somebody that is worthy of a high day two pick. And I like a lot of what I saw on his tape.
Yeah, so that for me, the tape is the biggest thing for me. I just wasn't, you know, I see some of those things, but there wasn't a certain
it's
element.
Not
of
flashy.
Game
it's that, not flashy.
That stood out to me. I mean, you look at some of the.
It's just solid.
Especially when you're looking at some of the tape where he's playing the best of the best, like at Texas. I think on that tape, he really struggled. You know, I kind of look to comp him a little bit to like an Andrew Booth Jr., who personally wasn't high on coming out in the draft, and that's just kind of my preference on a guy like that. He fits that kind of mold of cornerback. He probably would be 11 on my board, so like it's not like I'm putting him all the way down like where I don't know, maybe in like
where a day. I have Ennis Rakestraw Jr.
Maybe, yeah. Exactly. But, you know, I think he can develop into a starter at the next level, because like you said, the build is promising, and, you know, he has some of the intangibles.
By the way, another thing that comes along with that height, he's got phenomenal length, and that allowed him in college to have 98th percentile forced incompletion rate in the college football landscape last year. So if you throw it his way and he is even remotely in the area, he's going to get a finger on the ball, which I think that those are the kinds of traits that I want on my team. So that's why I have him at 6. Let's go to Mike Sainra still out of Michigan. He is your cornerback 6, my cornerback 7. What'd you like about Mike?
Well, I think the biggest thing comes back to production. I think production alone is going to get him drafted on day 2, maybe even pretty early. If you look over the last 2 years at Michigan, where he really stepped up his game, 7 interceptions over the last 2 seasons, allowed passer ratings of 83.3 and 71.8. He might be the best zone coverage corner in this class. I think this is where you start to look at, you know, his man coverage is something that I don't think you're wanting to put him on an island a lot, you know, but when you're playing a zone type coverage, he was one of the best, a 82.3 mm-hmm. PFF grade this past season. And, you know, he's just continued to get better and better at Michigan. The one knock I do really have on him is that he's really, really old. He'll be 24 starting his rookie season.
So old, a little bit younger than me, just the oldest. Yeah,
exactly. Right. For football players, I should
right,
say.
Right, right, right.
But I think that he could start day one if you want to move him inside to the nickel, based on his ball skill and the patience that he plays with. You know, that led to a lot of production in college, and I think there's some things to like about it, but I don't see a lot to like on the outside that would make me put him in maybe a top 5.
You're right about the production. In 15 games last year, 44 tackles, 6 interceptions, 6 PBUs. He's a versatile ball hawk, and he would be higher on my list if not for the age, but more primarily the size concerns. 5'9", 182 pounds. So he's going to be likely a slot at the next level. But he's a playmaker out there, man. He's got great anticipation, very strong ball skills. He's a strong athlete. He's got decent versatility, decent athleticism, not decent versatility. Hence the reason why he's at number 7 on my list. But I like him a lot, and it's just going to be a fit thing for the team that drafts him. If they're looking for a strong corner to anchor the interior of their cornerback group, he's your guy. I like him a lot. Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that.
Let's go to the top 5s then. Let's pull up the next slide here and see what we've got. So we have got the same 5 guys, not shocking at all. The 5 guys you could realistically see go in the first round of this year's draft. Pretty significantly different orders here. I am shocked you did not put our boy Quinyon at 1. I will fight you about that later. But let's start with Kool-Aid McKinstry, who is one of 2 guys in this group of cornerbacks who we're talking about that fall into the guys that came from, excuse me, just kidding. There's only 1 set of these in cornerbacks. There's 2 in the edges. We'll get to in a second. But guys that played the same position as another guy in this draft from the same school. That's Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terrion Arnold, both out of Alabama this year. And Kool-Aid is the other guy. I have talked to some smart folks that would argue, man, I wouldn't be shocked if Kool-Aid ended up being the better cornerback at the next level. What'd you think about Kool-Aid on tape?
So I think that he arguably has the best football IQ in this class. I think his vision.
Hang on, pause. Are you trying to FaceTime me right now? It says JT Runke is trying to FaceTime me.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I accidentally pressed that. My bad.
You trying to get a hold of me? Because I'm right here. You can say it to
no,
my face.
No, it's okay. My bad.
I should have just answered. I should have just answered. Should have.
You know, like we could have had that thing where you
could have held
like
it up to the screen and is Inception.
Exactly, right?
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, Clinton sorry.
Kinstry has arguably the best football IQ of the class. You know, he's not the most athletic prospect, I think, in this class, but when you look at him on tape, the vision on the field, I think, is something that's unmatched. You look at his production as well, 19 receptions on only 39 targets this past season. He's really a refined player too, 0 penalties allowed or taken in 2023. And like you said, when talking to people about Kool-Aid McKinstry, there's a little bit of this element that when you watch his tape or watch a Terrion Arnold, you're wondering why Terrion Arnold is getting targeted a lot more than a Kool-Aid McKinstry. And maybe that's because teams know that because of his, you know, his completion percentage allowed at 48.7%, as well as, you know, just the targets this year went way down. He's just getting better and better, more refined in his game. You wonder if that's the reason why Terrion Arnold was getting targeted more, because this guy was just absolutely locked down this past season. And I think he's definitely worth a first round selection.
He's got the size you're looking for. 6'1", 99 is that A plus across the board in terms of size and length. Very long levered guy. He's got a physical play style that matches the size. Decent production, 32 tackles and 7 PBUs in 14 games last year. 32 inch arms on a corner is delicious. The concerns for me is getting his head turned, finding the ball at times, not the greatest. And he only produced in two, he only produced two picks in three seasons at Alabama. So in terms of actually getting a hand on the ball, decent production at the college level. Coming down with the ball, not great. And so there's just a couple of high level traits from a corner you're looking for, the icing on the cake kind of thing, a ball winner, somebody that is going to create those oh so valuable turnovers. He may not be that guy, at least and not immediately, but generally speaking, betting on those traits, betting on that physical play style that matches a very big frame for a cornerback, I can get behind that all day long at 21 years of age, no less. So I like Kool-Aid a lot. Let's do Nate Wiggins, and then we'll get to Cooper DeJean, and I'll fight you or anybody else like Kenneth here in the comments asking if Cooper DeJean being a safety is a part of today's conversation. Oh yes, it is, and I'm going to fight anyone that thinks he is one, because I think he's a cornerback. But first, Nate Wiggins out of Clemson, skinny little guy, but feisty, fantastic defender. There's a reason why he's considered a first round talent. What'd you like about Nate?
Yeah, I mean, the size is the biggest knock on him, right? 2 percentile weight at 173, but I mean, he isn't a tall 2 dude.
2 percentile, baby. It's not great.
Percentile height. But what I really liked about him is, despite that weight difference, going up against some of the taller wide receivers this past year, like a Xavier Leggett, he still was able to shut them down. I was personally at that game where it was Xavier Leggett versus Nate Wiggins. Nate Wiggins kind of locked him up to the point where they were just trying their best not to get Xavier Leggett on Nate Wiggins anymore. You look at him, 18 of 41 targets. So it's not like teams weren't trying to take advantage of that size difference, but he simply was not allowing them to do that. You know, only allowed 176 yards, a 44.4 passer rating this past season, best of his career. And you just kind of look at his year to year progression, and he just continued to get better and better. He needs development more in the technique because of how tall he is. You know, that's something that is going to need more development at the next level, but because of those traits and how fluid he is at that size, it gives me confidence that he can be an every down starter at the next level.
Yeah, he's an electric player, and I like a lot about what you see on his tape, considering going in thinking he might get bullied a little bit out there. You're right that he doesn't really. He's able to hang with guys that are bigger than him. And he's got, you know, even though he's one day of fasting away from falling into the Flat Stanley conversation as another top corner from last year's draft, whose name I'm totally blanking on, out of Mississippi State. Help me out here.
Manuel Forbes.
Manuel Forbes. Thank you. Our original Flat Stanley King. Nate Wiggins is bordering on that, but he's only 20 years old, excuse me. Crazy fast, right? He ran a 4.28, as you should at that size profile, but he's got the long speed to hang with anybody at the next level. And so, yeah, could the size be an issue? There are some inconsistencies with like trying to play the run. He's not going to be a blitzer for you. The ball hawk instincts that he has are strong enough. The long speed that he has is strong enough to qualify him as a first round talent for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, personally, I think that Howie Roseman takes one look at him at the Eagles and he says, that's mine. I want
Eagle
that
right there. Yep. For the Eagles. Yep. All right. Let's talk about Cooper DeJean, who many have classified as a future safety of America in the NFL. He is 6'1", 203, a junior at 21 years old. Last year, pretty productive at Iowa, 41 tackles, 2 interceptions and 5 PBUs. He is a playmaker. He is a ball hawk. He's got the size you're looking for. The biggest question is whether or not he has the athleticism, and more particularly the fluidity, the range, the shiftiness to hang at the cornerback position. Some people question his stiffness. Some people question his ability to sink his hips and hang with a really talented receiver in the short area. I think I saw enough of him doing those things for my questions to be assuaged. You know, he doesn't at times he has trouble finding the deep ball. And so like locating the ball is one of the bigger technique things for him that is a little bit concerning. A little bit of an injury history. Had a broken fibula that he's just now coming back from. A lot of people are like, oh, he's good at safety because he didn't do some of the athletic testing at his pro day, or maybe just because he's coming off a broken foot. Like broken leg. That could also be a part of it. I don't know. But he's so sticky. He's a tone setter. He plays big. He plays fast. He plays strong. You watch some of like the high school highlight tape that's out there of him. He was a multi-sport athlete, and he was the white kid dunking on kids in high school basketball. He's a freak athlete. And just because he's going to be the first white corner since 1927, I don't think that should scare us off of letting him play on the outside at the next level, because I think that he really is the exception here.
What about man coverage? What
about it? You don't have to play that at the level, right? I don't think you have to play that at the NFL.
I don't know.
I think he can hang. Are you going to put him on your Tyreek Hills? Is he going to be lining up against Jalen Waddle? No. But can he hang against a bigger body, stiffer, like put him on a DK Metcalf? I trust him to hang in, man. He's not going to get out physical.
I don't know. He's
a physical player. He's a physical player.
That is fair. I just don't. He made my top five.
If he's getting beat, it's because somebody's dropping their hips and running away from him. Like they're just leaving him in the dust.
He's my number one safety with a bullet, easy, sign, sealed, delivered.
I agree.
He's my cornerback five. Because I just don't think like you can.
So
you
what
can,
you're saying is he's a quarterback.
You can say into the void all you want, like the Peter Skoronski conversation. I give
it's
him a
different
chance
than that though. Because this chance. Time I'm right. It's different than that because this time I'm right.
Okay.
So
then we'll leave it at that.
Listen, all I'm saying is when we did the safeties episode, you didn't try to bring him up, and here he is on your cornerback episode.
Yeah, because I wanted to wait for for this one.
I think you're telling yourself there a little bit. Okay, sure. Everyone in the comments saying he's a safety. You can comment 100 times. I'm not going to throw it up on the board. You're muted. Okay. Let's go to the top two guys in this class who we agree on. We just don't quite agree on the order. Let's start with Terry Arnold out of Alabama, the better of the two Alabama cornerbacks in the eyes of many. He's also got a very strong build like his running mate from Alabama, 6'1", 189, 21 years old. Crazy productive last year in 14 games, 63 tackles, 5 interceptions, 12 PBUs, strong athlete. There's not really anything like, did you find much to put in the negatives column for a Terry Arnold? I got to slow it down.
There really isn't a lot of negatives with him. You know, you look at his size, and then also you just more so, I think he is one of, sorry.
What? Now, James,
don't worry about it.
I hate you so much. All right,
I'm with you, James. I'm with you. I think that he'd be worth it.
There's a very large explosion outside my house just now. I don't know what it was.
I don't know what's happening.
It sounded like a firework.
I think the one
thing, right,
the one thing you could look at potentially, Terry and Arnold. You know, he does. He's not as good in man coverage as he is elsewhere on the field. But I think when you talk about the person and his attitude and just, you know, the leadership qualities that he brings, you get a little different vibe from a Terry and Arnold. I think from some of these other cornerbacks.
Wow. First white corner since the 20s, and you're going right to the locker room guy. That's crazy.
You know what?
Can't even talk about how athletic he is.
Should I just can't stop now? You can't let it go.
No, I'm sorry. You're right. I can't, but I'll let you continue. I'm sorry.
Okay. You know, also really productive at the next level, 5 interceptions in 2023, only allowed a passer rating of 50.7. You know, I think that if you draft him, in the early tens, in the teens, I think that he can be a day one starter for you.
But I think we agree. So we'll leave it at that. Good cornerback, Cooper DeJean. Okay. Sorry. I'm still on Cooper DeJean.
You God. Are
Terry Arnold. I'm so sorry. Yes. We're talking about him. Yeah. Tenacious, sticky defender. Just like reading my notes here because I'm flustered, still thinking about Cooper. Consistently making a play on the ball. That's the biggest thing for me. Like if I had to point to one big thing for him as my number two cornerback is that He gets after the ball and is proactive pretty consistently in his routes. He's not reacting or like playing the receiver as much as he is playing the ball on a consistent basis. And that's something that is really a difficult thing to teach. And he seems to come pretty naturally to him. So that's what I like most about Terry and Arnold. Okay. My number one corner, your number two corner. We agree these are the top two guys. It is Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo. Of course, we all watched every bit of Toledo football last year, so we're all very familiar with him before this offseason. Got the build you're looking for, 195, 6 foot. He's 22 years old. At Toledo, you'd imagine, pretty productive, 41 tackles, only one interception, but 18 PBUs last year. We saw him at the Senior Bowl in Alabama earlier this winter, and in January we were left pretty flabbergasted by the production that the performance he put on in those couple of days of practice.
Yeah, I think, like you said, the numbers are the numbers. A 4.33 40, really good height and weight, both upwards of 60th percentile for the position. You look at his, you know, his 74th percentile vertical jump, 73rd percentile 10-yard split. You know, he's got the build of a prototypical corner, and he's got the speed. And I think that's something that teams are going to really like about him. My one concern, and why he's not my number one, because it's very close. It is very close. I think when you look at the tape, it's hard. And we saw him do it. We saw him do it at the Senior Bowl, play more man coverage and on the receiver on a lot of the drills.
Is it the level of competition
at the Senior Bowl? I wonder, just, you know, when you look at it, if you look at the tape, he played a lot of off coverage. And I'm wondering how much of that can translate immediately at the next level. I think you look at some of the competition he's going up against, you know, he's going up against a Roman Wilson and a Brennan Rice, these maybe day two, day three guys. I'd be more interested to see him go up against these more NFL, like, start immediately and be productive wide receivers, and see how good he can be in press man coverage and you know, just not off coverage.
That's fair. I don't have as much concern about him playing in press. I think that the skill set, the size, the athleticism is going to translate there. And even if it takes some learning, I think that he can handle that eventually. If I had to pick one thing, it's just the level of play. Like, we don't have a whole long list of examples of him playing against top competition. Basing it off of some of the better competition he played at the 3 days of practice at the Senior Bowl, that's helpful and you get a frame of reference, but it's still a lot of against air. You know, it's a very small sample size. At Toledo, he just doesn't have a ton. There's not a long library of examples of him doing it against the best guys. That's not stopping me from taking him in the top 15 picks. I'm all the way there on him, and I'm not concerned about that. But if you told me he ended up just not being able to hang at the NFL level, I would mentally go back to that and say, you know, we just sometimes you can't accurately project what that giant leap in level of competition is going to be like until you see it. So that is Quinyon Mitchell, and that is our top 10 cornerbacks in the NFL draft.